This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. The last time I thought about what a turtle eats, I was watching Leonardo and his fellow Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles devouring pizza. But in Forest Park, scientists have been studying what turtles eat and excrete very closely. And what they're looking for is plastic. Researchers from the St. Louis Zoo have spent hours this summer wrangling turtles in Forest Park's waterways. One of the scientists leading this Kelonian plastics research is Dr. Sharon Deem. She's a veterinarian and director of the Institute for Conservation Medicine at St. Louis Zoo. Sharon, welcome back to St. Louis on the Air.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
So let's give some credit to the team that you worked with. How many folks did you go out looking for these turtles with this summer?
Sure. So this summer we spent about 7 weeks and we had seven people on the team.
And they were coming from mostly St. Louis and...
Correct. So most of us are seasoned turtle wrestlers, as you would say. But we had three students, two interns at the St. Louis Zoo, and a student from St. Louis University.
Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of people who are interested in turtles. What makes them so interesting in the first place?
Yes, so I would say every one of us has a turtle story. I have learned that during my life. Everyone has a turtle story, and turtles are fascinating. They were around at the time of the dinosaurs. There's about 356 species, and they're all highly endangered or threatened with extinction. So these important little creatures, and they're iconic tiny box turtles up to the giant tortoises of Galapagos. And they're often long-lived, and they often live in small areas. So when we learn about the turtle, we learn about the area they're in and what they may have accumulated over decades and decades of life.
Before we go too much further, what is your turtle story?
Yeah, I would say my turtle story started very young. So I grew up in the Washington, D.C. area, and I lived right along Rock Creek Park. And as a child, this might not surprise you, I used to make nature trails, and I met my first eastern box turtle there. And during my career as a wildlife veterinarian, I've worked with all kinds of turtle species, from sea turtles to giant tortoises in Galapagos. And then when we moved here about 19 years ago, I met this iconic, cute little creature, the three-toed box turtle that is the state reptile.
Mm-hmm. So this research that you have been doing and the way that they stay in one place, you mentioned that clearly would make things easier for a scientist because you know where to go to find the turtles. But how else is that significant or helpful to research in general? And then to research around plastics that you've been engaged in?
Yeah, so turtles, I wouldn't say they stay in just one place. And a lot of our studies, if people are interested, really, we have all our scientific papers out there. And turtles can move across distances. Some of them migrate. You think of the sea turtles of the world.
Right, right.
But also, turtles do have what we call site fidelity. So females like to nest in the same site. And turtles like to hang out in their same home range. And they're there 24/7. Unlike me, who's in a park like Forest Park for a few hours a day, they're there 24/7. So we really get a good indicator of the environment in which they live.
Mm-hmm. So Forest Park becoming the place for your research, how did that come about?
Yeah, so I've been with the St. Louis Zoo for 19 years, and my first few years were based in the Galapagos Islands, which is that chain of islands off the coast of Ecuador, owned by Ecuador. And most of us are familiar with the giant tortoises of Galapagos. Mm-hmm. And so we've done quite a bit of work there on the giant tortoise. And when we moved here, my family and I moved here a number of years ago after being in Galapagos, we went to Forest Park all the time, and we learned about this, you know, iconic little creature that people here in St. Louis really knew very little about.
That three-toed
box turtle. So it was really during that time, after spending years thinking about giant tortoises, which we still do, but moving here and realizing we here here in St. Louis have this amazing, important turtle species, and very little was known about it at the time.
Mm-hmm. We'd like to invite you to this conversation. Do you have questions for Sharon Deem about turtles and the impact of plastics on them and the environment? Give us a call at 314-382-8255. That's 314-382-TALK. You can also send us an email at talk@stlpr.org. So the three-toed box turtle and then those huge tortoises that I've seen a picture of you with one of them in the Galapagos Islands. What are the salient sort of similarities or the differences between them?
Yeah, that's excellent. And a lot of our work is, of course, collaborative with many different organizations. And the St. Louis Zoo and St. Louis University are really strong partners in this. And a shout out to Stephen Blake, who's the movement ecologist on both of these studies. And originally looking at the giant tortoises of Galapagos that we're all familiar with, we didn't even know until those studies started that they have a partial migration. Mm-hmm. They migrate up and down the volcanoes and within the islands. Now, you can think that's a real far way away, the Galapagos, but when we moved here and we're looking at these iconic little creatures in Forest Park, they're sort of like Galapagos tortoises. We've learned about their movement. We've learned that many feel kind of boxed in by roads, sort of like the giant tortoise on an island is not able to jump into the ocean and swim to the next island. Mm-hmm. So there are a lot of similarities you might not think about in terms of just movement patterns of this little turtle and big turtle. But also, we have done a lot of health studies looking at like novel pathogens, infectious diseases, and also plastics, which we're going to get into. And surprisingly, or maybe not that surprisingly, the challenges we have right here in Missouri are some of the same challenges we have in the Galapagos Islands of Ecuador.
Mm-hmm. So more connected than we might imagine.
We're much more connected than many people might think.
So speaking of movement, I want to hear about this turtle wrangling. So how did that work? What did it involve?
Yeah, so this summer we focused on aquatic turtles. So think of snapping turtles and red-eared sliders and many of the turtles that most people in Forest Park are familiar with. You see them out in the waters and on the logs. And we focused on these aquatic turtles that are a little harder to catch than a box turtle. Mm-hmm. So really what it entailed was, first of all, deciding which sites we thought would be most interesting for this study, and then putting what we call hoop nets out. So putting them out the night before so we can catch the turtles and then be able to handle them and work them up the following morning.
Mm-hmm. And some of the turtles that you did catch were already equipped with something from past.
So yeah, so in 2018, we actually 2017, excuse me, we actually started looking at aquatic turtle health here in Forest Park. And so, like good scientists, field scientists, we are able to do mark recapture. So we knew if we met a turtle again here in 2026, whether we had met it back in 2017.
Mm-hmm. How many of those did you find?
Yeah, good question, and I don't have the exact number.
Sure.
Of the 56 snapping turtles we've done this summer, I would say less than 8 were ones that we had already had in our hand 8 years ago.
So for this study that you were doing, what were you measuring exactly? And how does plastic come into that?
Yeah, so we do multiple things. So once we put the hoop nets out and we go into the water and we pull the turtles out, when we have a turtle in hand, there's so much information we can get. And starting just with a physical veterinary exam, a turtle can tell you so much by the lesions or traumatic injuries they might have. You can tell infectious diseases by some of the signs, just like in humans, if you have a bad cold. So we do a physical veterinary check, and then we're able to collect blood, were able to collect swabs from various places like the mouth, the cloaca, mm-hmm. as well as just the topical of the shell themselves. Mm-hmm. So all of those things really help us. We then take to the laboratory. But the last big piece, and a little different this summer, is sort of our putting them in the potty place, because we really needed feces from these turtles. So having a few hours within this distilled water to collect fecal samples was a little trickier than we had anticipated.
Mm-hmm. So the study that you were doing in 2017 that you mentioned, and what you're doing this time, were there any overlaps in what you were looking for?
Yeah, a lot of parallels. So back in 2017, we started with what we call baseline health data. So looking at when you go to the doctor, they're going to take a blood sample and look at your hematology and chemistry profile. So are all those different chemicals in your body indicating that you're healthy? And then we also looked for various really, really important infectious diseases of turtles. And so those data we have, they're all but submitted for publication. And so we did those exact tests as well this year. We just hadn't started with the plastics back in 2017.
Mm-hmm. What in 2026 are you thinking about or looking for regarding microplastics?
Yeah, so one of the things the St. Louis Zoo has done since the early 2010s in partnership with the University of Missouri Columbia, Westminster College, as well as the U.S. Geologic Survey, a team of us really started honing in on the impacts of plastics on aquatic turtle species. And so not so much the many of us have seen the picture of the straw in the sea turtle's nose, mm-hmm. and some of those macroplastics. But we as a team, a collaborative team, were looking at those chemicals from plastics and the impacts they may have on aquatic turtles.
Mm-hmm. We're going to take a very quick break here, but we want to invite you again to this conversation. Do you have any questions for Sharon Deem about turtles and microplastics? Give us a call at 314-382-8255. That's 314-382-TALK. We'll be right back. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio. Welcome back. Let's return to our conversation with Sharon Deem. She's veterinarian and director of the Institute for Conservation Medicine. We're talking today about some research that she and colleagues have been doing on turtles in Forest Park and microplastics in them. So before the break, Sharon, we were discussing plastics and presence in Forest Park's turtles. It seems that we have been talking more about microplastics, in recent days, in recent years, but you've been studying plastics for quite some time. What sparked that interest?
Yeah, so many of my earlier years as a clinician, as well as a field veterinarian, I worked with sea turtles, and I really saw kind of the impact that giant plastics, like the straw I mentioned, and an entanglement and what plastics were doing to sea turtle populations. And it was during those years that, as you say, a lot of the science was also starting to ask, what about the chemicals that make plastics plastics, right? Those endocrine disruptor chemicals. And so again, with my colleagues at these local Missouri organizations, we wanted to really understand what the impacts of these chemicals that make plastics plastics, what those impacts are on aquatic turtle species. And mm-hmm. and so we started better understanding bisphenol A, for example, the one that most of us are familiar with, BPA, and exposure to that in a turtle in the environment. Is that having any kind of health impacts on turtle species?
Mm-hmm. We have Jeff, who's calling from Eureka. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Sure, go ahead.
Dr. Sharon, thank you for all the work that you're doing with this project and with Forest Park Living Lab. I know you quite well from that. My question is, how many species of turtle, if how many species of turtle do you find in Forest Park? And which one species, if you've found this out, is most adversely affected by the plastic chemicals?
Jeff, thank you. Yes.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. Great question. So first of all, one thing I'll say is Missouri, as a landlocked state, meaning we don't have any oceans on our state borders, we have one of the highest number of turtle species. So we have 18 turtle species in our state.
Oh.
And hopefully everybody's going to go out and look that up and really be pretty pleased with the number we have. So in Forest Park, I can't, Jeff, give you an exact number. Over the years of studying, I believe we're up to 8 species. But we also know that unfortunately, some people drop turtles off, and so the numbers may fluctuate. To answer your question about who's most impacted by plastics, stay tuned in the next few months with some of our data coming in, but we're really focusing on the snapping turtle.
Mm-hmm. If you have a question, Jeff, thank you. If you have a question, as Jeff did, give us a call at 314-382-8255. That's 314-382-TALK. So the species, why does that matter? And what are you finding in the different species that do live at Forest Park?
Yeah, so for the aquatics, we've really, most of our study has been snapping turtles and red-eared sliders, and snapping turtles probably more. And there's a number of reasons for that. And as our technician at the St. Louis Zoo would say, Jamie Palmer, she would say it's because they're the best turtle on the planet.
Okay.
So snapping turtles are amazing, and they're really important for the ecology of river systems, mm-hmm. right? So using them, and we know we have a guesstimate of about 300 to 400 of them in Forest Park. Total guesstimation based on our few years of study, but they're a really important species there in Forest Park. We also know a bit about their life history, right? They live in the water, but they lay eggs in the soil and sediment. They come up on land. So they're being exposed to water and soil and land.
Mm-hmm. In ways that other species are not.
Yeah, in ways that, and they're big enough also for us to collect those samples that we want, mm-hmm. Albeit poop has been a little difficult, the feces, but the blood and the swabs have been very easy. But really using them and understanding their life history and how their life history takes them across these different environmental areas is really important when we're looking at sort of these long-lasting pollutants that may be in their environment.
Mm-hmm. And the feces is hard because they're aquatic?
I think it's because they're turtles.
Oh,
turtles. They
just had to ask the question.
Yeah.
So plastics and biology, what do plastics do to biology?
So with the studies we've done, and these are all published out in the scientific literature, so we've seen some pretty worrying impacts of things such as bisphenol A on turtle species and aquatic turtles. And the two that I'll just mention is one is sort of at the anatomical level. So this may be a new information about how turtles decide what sex to be. So turtles are egg bearers. So they lay their eggs, and it's the temperature of what your egg is incubating as to whether you'll be a boy or a girl.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's under a particular threshold, you'll be a boy. If it's above, you'll be a girl.
Mm-hmm.
So it's called temperature-dependent sex determination. Pretty wild reality of biology in the turtle, but what we've learned is if we incubate these turtles at boy-producing temperatures, but they're exposed to bisphenol A, the amounts that are in our rivers here in the U.S., here in Missouri, we will override that temperature determination, and we feminize the actual hatchling or the turtle. So we're seeing anatomical changes in their gonads. So not their ovotestes, to get a little bit technical. But secondly, behaviorally, we see that these turtles, as they grow up, they behave more like females. And we've done some really nifty maze techniques with these hatchlings of seeing how they go for food. And they're more female-like, which means they're smarter in terms of finding the food. So we're showing both behavioral and anatomy changes from exposure of an incubating egg at levels basically that are present in many of our river systems.
Mm-hmm. We have Matt, who is calling from St. Louis with a question. Matt, welcome to St. Louis on the Air.
Hey, thank you, guys. I lead a wildlife tour twice a week at Post-Dispatch Lake, and we encounter snapping turtles all the time. So one of the things I'm concerned about is we have golf courses bordering that lake. In fact, we see golf balls in the shallow water there in their hundreds. I'm worried about some of the chemicals used to treat the golf courses. Are those detectable within the bloodstreams of these snapping turtles? Do you feel like there's a negative interaction there?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question, Dr. Dean.
Yeah, thank you, Matt. That is an excellent question, and that is part of our study. So many of these pesticides and herbicides that are used throughout the nation as well as globally do have these endocrine disruptor capabilities. So the diagnostics we're doing will do kind of a quantitative look at the blood levels within the turtles for these very important chemicals. And so it is something that is part of our study, part of many studies, as we all try to understand the pros and cons of using various chemicals to restore areas and to have areas be healthy environmentally, but without having those bycatch problems with the chemicals that are used.
Mm-hmm. And then the golf balls themselves are covered with plastic, right?
Yeah, so and they can degrade. Like, that's one of the big problems with microplastics. They often start as macroplastics, and with sun and water and time, they just degrade into these microplastics.
Mm-hmm. So the connection then, Dr. Deem, between the plastics that you're finding in turtles and then plastics in people, what are some of the, you know, the biggest concerns or questions when it comes to that?
Yeah, so I think it's important for all of us to think about where we are with plastics today. And it's one of the biggest, what we call One Health challenges. So really it connects humans and animals and the environment, and kind of what something like this chemical or these things that are in the environment and how they're impacting reproductive health, how they're impacting immunological health. Really, what are they doing to both human and non-human animals? And I know we're focusing on turtles, but again, I'd invite the listeners to really dig in and look at some of the really amazing human health studies that have been done in the last decades, looking at the changing fertility in humans. Humans, the changing earlier puberty in girls and earlier menopause in women and lower sperm count in men, and sort of looking at how endocrine disruptors may be playing a role in all those things.
Mm-hmm. I actually remember back in, I would say, the early-ish 2000s, where there was conversation about BPA in cans, like for tomato paste, and how that affects women's health in particular. Now, you mentioned One Health, and that focuses on interconnection among different living beings. Now, what interconnections stand out to you, Dr. Deem, in this turtle-related research?
So we'll focus in on Forest Park and what we did this summer. So Forest Park is the number one urban park in America, and we in St. Louis should be very proud of that. And we have 15.5 million human visitors to the park, and having a healthy urban green space we know is good for human health. It's good for mentally and physically. It's really important. So just understanding the level of plastics, both at the macro level as well as what the chemicals might be doing to the turtles that are there 24/7, I think really gives us a good indication of how we can all work together to ensure the park stays the number one urban park in America, mm-hmm. and how we can have this healthy environment.
What were some of the things that maybe you and your fellow researchers noticed about the way humans were affecting the environment and specifically the waterways? Like, did you find things in the water that just should not have been there?
Yeah, so our study is at 5 different sites along the water system within Forest Park. And so we noted different levels of plastic bags and plastic bottles and all human products that are in the waterways. And actually this fall, working with St. Louis University again and one of their students, we're going to quantify, so really look at the number of different types of plastic products that are in the waterway and understand, is it runoff after rains? Is it near different water systems more than others? Are there simple ways that we can minimize the number of human plastics that are in the systems.
Mm-hmm. What are the next steps with this research, with the findings? And
yeah, so first, we've had 7 weeks. We've collected samples from 56 of these animals, and now we're working both with a lab at the St. Louis University, a lab at the University of Pennsylvania, doing different studies to look for the microplastics, to look for those chemicals, such as what Matt mentioned. And also, we'll be looking at the infectious diseases, those swabs I mentioned, and just baseline health and bringing understanding, do those health parameters within the turtles, do they vary based on the level of microplastics that you have in the blood or chemicals you have in the blood, and really understanding that link. And as a pilot project, we hope to understand a lot along those 5 sites, is there a place we need to be more focused on? Mm-hmm. And then the second part is what I just mentioned, really quantifying just the macroplastics that are in the system.
Mm-hmm. You'd mentioned that on the team, there were a couple of interns. It seems like there are a lot of ways in which our natural environment is deteriorating, and it has an impact on us as humans, but we should be taking care of the environment to begin with. Are there certain kinds of conversations that you are having, particularly with younger people, to encourage them not only to be better stewards of the environment, but to get into the kind of work that you're doing?
Yeah, I love this. So, yeah, the next generation of One Health practitioners or field biologists are folks that are really thinking about how important environmental health is for their family, for everyone, is so important. And those conversations are happening. I'd like to mention, this is one part of the larger Forest Park Living Lab that Jeff had mentioned on the call. And we're a group of the zoo, the St. Louis University, Washington University, Forest Park Forever, the World Bird Sanctuary, mm-hmm. like this group of really dedicated conservationists and scientists that are using one urban park in one city in America to understand wildlife health and how that relates with human health and human use of this amazing green space in our city.
And as we close, is there something about research that has taken place elsewhere regarding microplastics and plastics, because that is what we've been speaking about, that gives you a sense of hope or provides a way of looking at practical approaches to making things better?
so much hope. And I think, you know, people are talking about plastics. People care about these things. And, you know, even at the St. Louis Zoo in 2016, we stopped using plastic bags. In 2025, we stopped using single-use plastics. Just these steps that we can all be taking to really minimize how much plastic is going out into our environment and how much of the chemicals in plastics are going into our bodies. And there are great examples of people both at the grassroots as well as governmental levels that are really working to make these changes.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Sharon Deem is a veterinarian and director of the Institute for Conservation Medicine at the St. Louis Zoo. Sharon, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Elaine.
This episode was produced by Danny Wisentowski.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thank you.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.